It is 12 p.m. noon here on Saturday, May 12th. And this is WEFT Champagne right now, and this is the world we live in. I'm your host, Ben Theobald. And on this show, I usually talk about stuff that's going on in politics, usually or political things that have to do with politics. And on Wednesday, the Illinois Senate voted to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. This vote comes about 36 years after the amendment appeared to die, right after, I'm reading from the Chicago Tribune. The vote came about 36 years after the amendment appeared to die, after 35 states had ratified it, which is three short of what needed by the 1982 deadline. If Illinois approves this, this could be very symbolic. I believe the first state to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment was the state of Hawaii. And just a little bit about the Equal Rights Amendment. It was passed by the Senate in March 22nd, 1972 is when the Equal Rights Amendment was passed by the U.S. Senate and sent for ratification. This is going according to the History Channel's website. The Equal Rights Amendment was first proposed by the National Women's Political Party in 1923. The Equal Rights Amendment was to provide for the legal equality of the sexes and prohibit discrimination on the basis of sex. More than four decades later, the revival of feminism in the late 1960s spurred its introduction into Congress under the leadership of U.S. Representative Bella Abzug of New York, and feminists such as Betty Friedan and Gloria Steinem, and it did win the required two-thirds vote from the U.S. House Representatives in 1971. And in March 1972, it was approved by the U.S. Senate and sent to the states. Unfortunately, during the mid-1970s, there was a conservative backlash against this feminism support for the Equal Rights Amendment, which ultimately failed to achieve the ratification by the requisite 38 or 3/4 of the states. And because of this rejection of the Equal Rights Amendment, sexual equality, with the notable exception of when it pertains to the right to vote, is not protected by the U.S. Constitution. Although some, as time has progressed, some states have been passing legislation to protect legal rights of women. And so that's what's been going on here in Illinois. They're hoping to pass the Equal Rights Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. And I believe it passed in the Illinois Senate of a vote of 43 to 12. There was no debate, and Representative Lou Lang of the Democrat from Skokie is hoping to build support for it. They still haven't exactly passed the amendment yet. I believe Illinois would be, if Illinois were to pass the Equal Rights Amendment, they would become the 37th state to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment Act. And here is a clip of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg talking about the Equal Rights Amendment and why it's in its importance.
Spent many years devoted to the passage of the Equal Rights Amendment, and it came close, but it didn't pass.
By three states.
Do you think that would make any difference today? Do you think that's still a good idea?
Yes, I think it's a fine idea. Not that we haven't come almost as far as we would with the ERA by the court's interpretation of the 14th Amendment. But still, if you are trying to decide cases the way the framers would have decided them, if you ask anyone who was in Congress at the time the 14th Amendment was sent to the state, does this mean that women will be citizens of equal stature to men? The answer would be, of course not. Many states still didn't have Married Women's Property Acts. So women who married couldn't sue or be sued in their own name, they couldn't contract in their own name, couldn't hold property in their own name. The 14th Amendment wasn't meant to change any of that. But the equality principle, which by the way, you know, is not in the original Constitution, the Equal Protection Clause shows up in the 14th Amendment, which is a restriction on what states can do. When at the time of the Brown v. Board decision, one of the cases that was combined in that litigation was from D.C., challenging the segregated public schools in our nation's capital. Well, D.C. is not a state, and it is governed by federal law. So what was the Supreme Court going to do? It was basing the Kansas case and the others on the 14th Amendment, on the Equal Protection Clause. Well, the court incorporated an equality principle into the Due Process Clause mm-hmm. of the Fifth Amendment, which governs. But I suppose the best reason is if you look at any constitution that has been written since 1950, you will find in it a statement that men and women are equal before the law. So I have 3 granddaughters. I would like to be able to take out my pocket constitution and say that the equal citizenship stature of men and women is a fundamental tenet of our society, like free speech, the women's equal right to do whatever her talent and hard work enable her to do. I'd like that to be in the Constitution.
And yes, so I believe there should be the Illinois House, there should be a vote on whether or not the Equal Rights Amendment will be, if Illinois will pass that in the next week or so, and I will try to keep you updated on that. Hopefully in the near future. May 10th was the anniversary of Nelson Mandela, who was the first black Democratic president for South Africa. And I will play a few speeches. And just to make clear, that clip of Ruth Bader Ginsburg that I played was from the YouTube of the Aspen Institute. So thank you to the Aspen Institute for having access to that clip. This is from the SAB. This speech clip is from the SABC Digital News. And again, this is Nelson Mandela's inauguration speech that he gave on May 10th, 1994.
Your Majesties, Your Royal Highnesses, distinguished guests, comrades and friends, today all us do by our presence here and by our celebrations in other parts of our country and the world, confer glory and hope to newborn liberty. Out of the experience of an extraordinary human disaster that lasted too long, must be born a society of which all humanity will be proud. Our daily duties as ordinary South Africans must produce an actual South African reality that will reinforce humanity's belief in justice, strengthen its confidence in the nobility of the human soul, and sustain all our hopes for a glorious life for all. All this we owe both to ourselves and to the peoples of the world who are so well represented here today. To my compatriots, I have no hesitation in saying that each one of us is as intimately attached to the soil of this beautiful country as are the famous jacaranda trees of Pretoria and the mimosa trees of the bushveld. Each time one of us touches the soil of this land, we feel a sense of personal renewal. The national mood changes as the seasons change. We are moved by a sense of joy and exhilaration when the grass turns green and the flowers bloom. That spiritual and physical oneness we all share with this common homeland explains that the depth of the pain we all carried in our hearts as we saw our country tear itself apart in terrible conflict, and as we saw it spent, outlawed, and isolated by the peoples of the world, precisely because it had become the universal base of the pernicious ideology and practice of racism and racial oppression. We, the people of South Africa, feel fulfilled that humanity has taken us back into its bosom, that we, who were outlaws not so long ago, had today been given the rare privilege to be host to the nations of the world on our own soil. We thank all our distinguished international guests for having come to take possession with the people of our country. What is, after all, a common victory for justice, for peace, for human dignity? We trust that you will continue to stand by us as we tackle the challenges of building peace, prosperity, non-sexism, non-racialism, and democracy. We deeply appreciate the role that the masses of our people and their political, mass democratic, religious, women, youth, business, traditional, and other leaders have played to bring about this conclusion. Not least amongst them is my second deputy president, the Honorable F.W. de Klerk. We would also like to pay tribute to our security forces in all their ranks for the distinguished role they have played in securing our first democratic election and the transition to democracy from bloodthirsty forces which still refuse to see the light. The time for the healing of the wounds has come. The moment to bridge the chasms that divide us has come. The time to build is upon us. We have at last achieved our political emancipation. we pledge ourselves to liberate all our people from the continuing bondage of poverty, deprivation, suffering, gender, and other discrimination. We succeeded to take our last steps to freedom in conditions of relative peace. We commit ourselves to the construction of a complete, just, and lasting peace. We have triumphed in the effort to implant hope in the breasts of the millions of our people. We enter into a covenant that we shall build a society in which all South Africans, both black and white, will be able to walk tall without any fear in their hearts, assured of their inalienable right to human dignity. A rainbow nation at peace with itself and the world. As a token of his commitment to the renewal of our country, the new interim government of national unity will, as a matter of urgency, address the issue of amnesty for various categories of our people who are currently serving terms of imprisonment. We dedicate this day to all the heroes and heroines in this country and the rest of the world who sacrificed in many ways and surrendered their lives so that we could be free. Their dreams have become reality. Freedom is their reward. We are both humbled and elevated by the honor and privilege that you, the people of South Africa, have bestowed on us as the first president of a united, democratic, non-racial, and non-sexist South Africa to lead our country out of the valley of darkness. We understand it still that there is no easy road to freedom. We know it well that none of us acting alone can achieve success. We must therefore act together as a united people for national reconciliation, for nation building, for the birth of a new world. Let there be justice for all. Let there be peace for all. Let there be work, bread, water, and salt for all. Let each know that for each, the body, the mind, and the soul have been freed to fulfill themselves. Never, never, and never again shall it be that this beautiful land will again experience the oppression of one by another and suffer the indignity and suffer the indignity of being the skunk of the world. The sun shall never set on so glorious a human achievement. Let freedom reign. God bless Africa. I thank you.
I will play another speech by Nelson Mandela. I believe this was one of his last speeches that he gave before his presidency ended in South Africa. This was a speech he gave and it was March 16th of 1999. And again, this is Nelson Mandela, one of his last speeches.
Honorable members and delegates, today does not mark the end of our country's first democratic government, nor does it bring to an end the term that I have the profound privilege to be serving as president. The business of government continues for some months to come, and the high responsibilities which our Constitution confers on the President must still be exercised in the interest of our nation. But this day is a moment of deep significance for all of us, whom the people of South Africa have entrusted with representing their needs and interests, their aspirations and hopes. And so it comes to pass that we, who have collectively accepted the role of political leadership of our nation, today take leave of one another as members of this, our country's first democratically elected parliament, because the people of South Africa finally chose a profoundly legal path to their revolution. Those who frame and enact a constitution and law are in the vanguard of the fight for change. It is in the legislatures that the instruments have been fashioned to create a better life for all. It is here that oversight of government has been exercised. It is here that our society, in all its formations, has had an opportunity to influence policy and its implementation. In brief, we have laid the foundation for a better life. Things that were unimaginable a few years ago have become everyday reality. And of this, we must be proud. Questions have been raised, we know, as to whether this house is not a carriage of the gravy train, whose passengers idle away their time at the nation's expense. To those who raise such questions, we say, look at the record of our Parliament during these first years of freedom. Look at the work of the nation's representatives when they formed themselves into a constitutional assembly with a breadth of consultation and public participation that few would have imagined possible. And in a spirit of unprecedented consensus seeking, it was here that a constitution was formulated and adopted to enshrine our people's deepest aspirations. Look at the 100 laws on average that have been passed by this legislature each year. These have been no trivial laws, nor mere adjustments to an existing body of statutes. They have created a framework for the revolutionary transformation of society and of government itself, so that the legacy of our past can be undone and put right. It was here that the possibility was created of improving the lives and working conditions of millions. Look at the work of the committees that have scrutinized legislation and improved it, posed the difficult questions of the executive, and given the public insight and oversight of government as never before. This is a record in which we can take pride. But even as we do so, we do need to ask whether we need to re-examine our electoral system so as to improve the nature of our relationship as public representatives with the voters. Honorable members and delegates, I raise this question with great pride in what has been done to lay the foundation of democracy in our country. Personally, I dare to say that moments in my life have been few and far between when I have sensed the excitement of change as in this august chamber. Each historical period defines the specific challenges of national progress and leadership, and no man is an island. And for me personally, I belong to the generation of leaders for whom the achievement of democracy was the defining challenge. I count myself fortunate in not having had to experience the rigors of exile and decades of underground and mass struggles that consumed the lives of such giants as Oliver Tambo, Anton Lembede, Duma Nokwe, Moses Kotane and J.B. Marks, Robert Sobukwe and Zephaniah Mutuping, Oscar Mpete, Lilian Ngoyi, Bishop Alpheus Zulu, Bram Fischer, Helen Joseph, Alex Laguma, Yusuf Dadu and Monty Michael. Unfortunately, Steve Biko passed away in his youth, but he was a rising star. If he had been given the chance, I would have counted him among these. I count myself fortunate that among that generation, history permitted me to take part in South Africa's transition from that period into the new era whose foundation we have been laying together. I hope that decades from now, when history is written, the role of that generation will be appreciated, and that I will not be found wanting against the measure of their fortitude and vision. Indeed, Madam Speaker, I have noted with deep gratitude the generous praise that has often been given to me as an individual. But let me state this, to the extent that I have been able to achieve anything, I know that this is because I am the product of the people of South Africa. I am the product of the rural masses who inspired in me the pride in our past and the spirit of resistance. I am the product of the workers of South Africa who in the mines, factories, fields and offices of our country have pursued the principle that the interests of each are founded in the common interests of all. I am the product of South Africa's intelligentsia of every color who have labored to give our society knowledge of itself and to fashion our people's aspirations into a reasonable dream. I am the product of South Africa's business people in industry and agriculture, commerce and finance, whose spirit of enterprise has helped turn our country's immense natural resources into the wealth of our nation. To the extent that I have been able to take our country forward to this new era, it is because I am the product of the people of the world who have cherished the vision of a better life for all people everywhere. They insisted in a spirit of self-sacrifice that that vision should be realized in South Africa too. They gave us hope because we knew by their solidarity that our ideas could not be silenced, since they were the ideas of humanity. I am the product of Africa and a long cherished dream of a rebirth that can now be realized, so that all of her children may play in the sun. If I have been able to help her take our country a few steps towards democracy, non-racialism, and non-sexism, it is because I am a product of the African National Congress. Of the movement for justice, dignity, and freedom that produced countless stars in whose shadow we find our glory. Madam Speaker, when, as will be the case in a few months, I once again become an ordinary citizen of our land, it shall be as one whose concerns and capacities are shaped by the people of our land. I will count myself as among the agent of our society, as one of the rural population, as one concerned for the children and youth of our country, and as a citizen of the world committed, as long as I have the strength, to work for a better life for all people everywhere. And as I have always done, I will do what I can within the discipline of the broad movement for peace and democracy to which I belong. I will then count myself amongst the ordinary men and women whose well-being must, in any country, be the standard by which democratic government must be judged. Primary among these criteria is the reconstruction and development program aimed at building a better life for all. Primary among these criteria are national unity and reconciliation amongst communities and citizens whose destiny is inseparable. Honorable members, it is a measure of our success as a nation that an international community that inspired hope in us in turn itself finds hope in how we overcame the divisions of centuries by reaching out to one another. To the extent that we have been able to reciprocate in renewing hope amongst the people of the world, we are grateful indeed and feel double blessed. As it goes without saying, that we should all live up to those expectations which the world has of us. As I was reminded yet again on the visit which I have just made to the Netherlands and four Nordic countries, the world admires us for our success as a nation in rising to the challenges of our era. Those changes were to avoid the nightmare of debilitating racial war and bloodshed, and to reconcile our people on the basis that our overriding objective must be together to overcome the legacy of poverty, division and inequity. To the extent that we have still to reconcile and heal our nation, to the extent that the consequences of apartheid still permeate our society and define the lives of millions of South Africans as lives of deprivation, those challenges are unchanged. I would like to take this opportunity to pay tribute to all the parties represented in this parliament for their contribution to the progress we have made. Though we have our differences, often important and sometimes profound, we have as a collective demonstrated our overriding commitment to the new order that we have together established. You have ensured that this parliament is no rubber stamp in the hands of government, and you have given birth to a new democratic political culture. And so, in the spirit of that democracy, we are today taking leave of one another, so that our parties can once again submit themselves to the judgment of the people. Many of us will return to the second democratic parliament. Others will not return to this hallowed institution, whether because of the electorate's judgment on our parties, or because of our own choice, or because of the imperatives of advanced age. For my part, I wish to say that it has been a profound privilege to be accountable to this parliament. Though there is sadness in leave-taking, I am filled with contentment by the sounds of voices that I have heard in the many debates that I have attended in this National Assembly, in the Senate, and in its successor, the National Council of Provinces. The other day's debate on issues affecting Afrikaners and other communities was no exception. Among the principles which the liberation movement pursued from the beginning of negotiations is that out of any debate, we must emerge stronger and more united, and that there should be no winners or losers. Deputy President Thabo Mbeki, whom we all expect to be the President of South Africa, exemplifies this approach. Exemplifies this approach, which is critical to the unity of our country. I call on all to give your support to his leadership across all political parties. His and other voices are those of a new generation of leaders that are emerging in answer to new historical challenges. They are the voices of the good men and women who exist in all communities and in all parties, and who define themselves as leaders by their capacity to identify the issues that unite us as a nation. Together, we must continue our efforts to turn our hopes into reality. The long walk continues. Ndlela ntle, moyi loop, tsela tshweu.
Share this video with friends.
And again, that was Mandela's last speech that he gave the president of South Africa, and that was from that video. That audio was from Tuna Cheki, So thank you to them for having access, me having access to that and playing it on here. Again, and I'm going to play another speech by Mandela that he gave, a speech at the first Laurel World Sports in 2000. This was in 2000. And again, another speech that Mandela gave about the importance of sports.
Thank you. I am happy to be with you tonight at the first Laureus World Sports Award. Sport has the power to change the world. It has the power to inspire. It has the power to unite people in a way that little us does. It speaks to youth in a language they understand. Sport can create hope where once there was only despair. It is more powerful than governments in breaking down racial barriers. It laughs in the face of all types of discrimination. The heroes are standing with me are examples of this power. They are valiant, not only in the playing field, but also in the community, both local and international. They are champions, and they deserve the world's recognition. Together, they represent an active, vigorous Hall of Fame, a Hall of Fame that goes out into the world, spreading help, inspiration, and hope. Their legacy will be an international community where the rules of the game are the same for everyone, and behavior is guided by fair play and good sportsmanship. I ask you now to rise and join me in commending the original inductees into the World Sports Academy Hall of Fame.
And I'll just read some public service announcements. At the Art Theater, playing from playing all the way through May 17th, which is Thursday, is the movie Lean on Pete. The film concerns an aging racehorse whose shelf life is up, but a boy named Charlie, who grows attached to the horse, figures out a plan to prevent the horse, his horse friend, from being put out to permanent pasture. Charlie and Pete embark on a journey across the new American frontier in search of a loving aunt which he hasn't seen in quite some time. And they go through this experience and adventure and kind of heartbreak. They pursue the dream of finding a place that they can call home. And that's playing at the Art Theater. And then there will be a 10 p.m. late night screening on Friday and Saturday nights of the horror movie, the 1988 horror movie Brain Damage, which revolves around an unwary teenager who falls into a deadly relationship with a centuries-old parasite that thrives on human brains. So that sounds interesting. And for all date times on movies playing at the Art Theater, you can go to the Art Theater's website, www.theartheater.org. And of course, only three times a year here at WFT members have a chance to learn about WFT and the skills to become an on-air host. Once training is complete, you can substitute programs for other air shifters, such as this one, if you're interested in that, or any other kind of music shows, or you can even propose your own program. That's what I did with this show. And the next training schedule will begin on June 3rd, which is Sunday, at 3 p.m. And if you want to participate, you can complete an application. Those are available at WFT's website, www.weft.org, or you can go to the station located here in downtown Champaign at 113 North Market Street. You can also email completed applications to airshifter training at weft.org, or you can drop them off here at the station. Space is limited to the first 15 applicants, so, you know, as soon as you have the opportunity, and if that's something that you're interested, you know, feel free to send us an email or come down here and drop off an application. And of course, the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT associates. And with that, another kind of mark in history is Winston Churchill's speech that he gave to the House of Commons, and this was in May 30th, 1940, when, of course, World War II was happening, and this is one of Winston Churchill's famous speeches, which is known as his blood, toil, tears, and sweat speech. So I'm going to play that for you right now.
Mr. Speaker, on Friday evening last, I received His Majesty's commission to form a new administration. It was the evident wish and will of Parliament and the nation that this should be conceived on the broadest possible basis, and that it should include all parties, both those who supported the late government and also the parties of the opposition. I have completed the most important part of this task. A war cabinet has been formed of five members, representing with the Liberal opposition the unity of the nation. The three party leaders have agreed to serve either in the War Cabinet or in high executive office. The three fighting services have been filled. It was necessary that this should be done in one single day on account of the extreme urgency and rigor of events. A number of other key positions were filled yesterday, and I am submitting a further list to His Majesty tonight. I hope to complete the appointment of the principal ministers during tomorrow. The appointment of the other ministers usually takes a little longer, but I trust that when Parliament meets again, this part of my task will be completed and that the administration will be complete in all respects. Sir, I considered it in the public interest to suggest that the House should be summoned to meet today. Mr. Speaker agreed and took the necessary steps in accordance with the powers conferred upon him by the resolution of the House. At the end of the proceedings today, the adjournment of the House will be proposed until Tuesday, the 21st of May, with, of course, provision for earlier meeting if need be. The business to be considered during that week will be notified to members at the earliest opportunity. I now invite the House, by the resolution which stands in my name, to record its approval of the steps taken and to declare its confidence in the new government. Sir, to form an administration of this scale and complexity is a serious undertaking in itself. But it must be remembered that we are in the preliminary stage of one of the greatest battles in history, that we are in action at many points in Norway and in Holland, that we have to be prepared in the Mediterranean, that the air battle is continuous, and that many preparations have to be made here at home. In this crisis, I hope I may be pardoned if I do not address the House at any length today. I hope that any of my friends and colleagues or former colleagues who are affected by the political reconstruction will make all allowances for any lack of ceremony with which it has been necessary to act. I would say to the House, as I said to those who have joined the government, I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat. We have before us an ordeal of the most grievous kind. We have before us many, many long months of struggle and of suffering. You ask, what is our policy? I will say, it is to wage war by sea, land, and air, with all our might, with all the strength that God can give us, to wage war against a monstrous tyranny never surpassed in the dark and lamentable catalogue of human crime. That is our policy. You ask, what is our aim? I can answer in one word, victory. Victory at all costs. Victory in spite of all terror. Victory however long and hard the road may be. For without victory there is no survival. Let that be realized. No survival for the British Empire. No survival for all that the British Empire stood for. No survival for the urge and impulse of the ages that mankind will move forward towards its goal. But I take up my task with buoyancy and hope. I feel sure that our cause will not be suffered to fail among men. At this time I feel entitled to claim the aid of all. And I say, come then, let us go forward together with our united strength.
And again, that was Winston Churchill and his bridge, blood, sweat, and yeah. just a little weather update as I wrap up this hour. Right now, the temperature is 75 degrees, and it's high and about, there might be, it's a bit cloudy, about 20% chance of rain. Tonight, the temperature will get about to 64 degrees with a chance, a 40% chance of rain and possible chances of thunderstorms and showers. And tomorrow will be a the temperature will be up to possibly get up to 84 degrees and with a 20% chance of rain. And then Sunday, and then tomorrow night we'll get the temperature will be around near 69 degrees with a chance of rain of 40% and again possible thunderstorms and rain. Clearly, I'm not a weatherman person. And So that will do it for, I believe, I have actually one more announcement. The Urbana Park District wants to remind you that the Crystal Lake Park Family Aquatic Center will open May 26th. I believe that's 2 weeks from today, so that's Saturday. Again, May 26th, and will be open through September 3rd, located on North Broadway in Urbana, just south of the Anita Purves Nature Center. The pool offers a fun cool down during hot summer days. And for more information about becoming a member or purchasing pool passes, you can visit urbanaparks.org, or you can call at the phone number 217-367-1544. Again, that's 217-367-1544. And just a reminder, if you haven't voted, you can do that at you can go to elections.il.gov for voting for information, and you can go to the Illinois Online Voter Application, the state board, and check to see if you're registered to vote. Of course, the midterm elections will be November, so you have plenty of time to hopefully see if you are registered to vote. And that will probably do it here for the world we live in. There'll be more shows here at WFT. So I'm going to play a song from Mavis Staples and from her album, If All I Was Was Black. And this is her song, Build a Bridge. And have a nice day.
But I bet you never have to remind anyone.